The following is an audio booklet from the United Church of God. To view this booklet and other resources online, please visit ucg.org.
The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. The Four Empires of Daniel's Prophecies. Among the Jewish captives taken from Judah and exiled to Babylon was a young man whose Hebrew name was Daniel. He was renamed Belteshazzar by the Babylonians. Daniel lived in the remarkable times of the downfall of the kingdoms of both Judah and Babylon. He served as a slave who became a high official in both the Babylonian government as well as its successor, the Medo-Persian Empire. At the end of Daniel's book, God instructed him to shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Daniel chapter 12, verse 4. This indicates that certain major prophecies that previously wouldn't have made sense will be understandable as the end approaches. The prophecies of Daniel provide important keys to establishing the accuracy of Bible prophecy. Many of his prophecies are so detailed and specific that, if they stand demonstrably proven, even the most biased mind will be at a loss to refute them. In fact, some skeptics have not challenged the content of Daniel's prophetic accuracy. Instead, rather than admit that his words are indeed inspired, they have simply labeled his book a fraud. They claim that it was not written by Daniel in the 6th century BC, as we can tell by events written of in the book, but was penned by an unknown author sometime around the mid-100s BC, long after many of the events prophesied in the book came to pass. This, critics allege, is the reason for the book's startling prophetic accuracy. Daniel's testimony challenges the critics, but let's first consider the nature of the critics' approach. They dispute Daniel's authorship because he refers to himself in the early chapters in the third person, as if writing about someone else. However, as the Expositor's Bible Commentary points out, this was the custom among ancient authors of historical memoirs. In relating some of his experiences, Daniel did write in the first person. The identity of Daniel's critics is significant as well. The first person to question the authenticity of Daniel's authorship was the Greek scholar and historian Porphyry, who lived in the 3rd century. He is labeled by historians as a Neoplatonist, which means he subscribed to the teachings of the Greek philosopher Plato rather than the Bible. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, Porphyry is well known as a violent opponent of Christianity and defender of paganism. Since Porphyry was an enemy of Christianity, his objectivity is open to question. He had no factual basis for his opinion, and his view contradicted the testimony of Jesus Christ, who referred to Daniel as the author of the book in Matthew chapter 24, verse 15. The 4th century biblical scholar Jerome refuted Porphyry's contention. Thereafter, no one took Porphyry's remarks seriously again until many centuries later. According to the Expositor's Study Bible, he was more or less dismissed by Christian scholarship as a mere pagan detractor who had allowed a naturalistic bias to warp his judgment. But during the time of the Enlightenment in the 18th century, all supernatural elements in Scripture came under suspicion. Some of today's scholars with liberal leanings have recycled these centuries-old arguments. Old Testament historian Eugene Merrill says their beliefs are built on feeble evidence. Daniel's rhetoric and language are eminently at home in the 6th century B.C. It is only on the most subjective and circular lines of evidence that the man and his writing have been denied historicity. Phenomenal prophecy and fulfillment. The accuracy of Daniel's prophecy of remotely distant events is spectacular. For example, in the 70 weeks prophecy recorded in Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 through 27, as Expositor's notes, Daniel predicts the precise year of Christ's appearance and the beginning of his ministry in 27 AD. A second remarkable prophecy recorded by Daniel is his interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2. In the second year of his reign, the Babylonian king had a troubling dream that none of his counselors could explain. Babylonian culture placed considerable emphasis on dreams, and Nebuchadnezzar was convinced that this one was of great importance. According to expositors, his dream gives us a disclosure of God's plan for the ages till the final triumph of Christ, and presents the foreordained succession of world powers that are to dominate the Near East till the final victory of the Messiah in the last days. Without prior knowledge of its content, Daniel explained the details of the dream to Nebuchadnezzar. "You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay." Daniel chapter 2, verses 31 through 33. Daniel told Nebuchadnezzar that his Babylonian empire was represented by the head of gold. The silver, bronze, and iron components of the image, or statue, represented three powerful empires that were to follow mighty Babylon. This interpretation provided an astounding preview of history. Nebuchadnezzar's dream occurred and was interpreted by Daniel about 600 BC. The image represented in symbolic form the sequence of great empires that would dominate the Middle East for centuries. According to expositors, the Silver Empire was to be Medo-Persia, which began with Cyrus the Great, who conquered Babylon in 539. This Silver Empire was supreme in the Near and Middle East for about two centuries. The Bronze Empire was the Greco-Macedonian Empire established by Alexander the Great. The Bronze Kingdom lasted for about 260 or 300 years before it was supplanted by the Fourth Kingdom. Iron connotes toughness and ruthlessness and describes the Roman Empire that reached its widest extent under the reign of Trajan. Trajan reigned 98 through 117 AD, and the Roman Empire itself ruled for many centuries. The Fourth Empire was depicted as having 10 toes. The feet and toes were composed partly of iron and partly of clay. Expositors continues. Verse 41 deals with a later phase or outgrowth of this Fourth Empire, symbolized by the feet and 10 toes, made up of iron and earthenware, a fragile base for the huge monument. The text clearly implies that this final phase will be marked by some sort of federation rather than by a powerful single realm. Another dream adds important details. Additional aspects of this succession of empires were revealed to Daniel in a later dream. This time the four empires were represented by four beasts: a lion, Babylonian Empire, a bear, Persian Empire, a leopard, Greco-Macedonian Empire, and a fourth beast described as terrible and unlike the other three. Notice what verse 7 says about this fourth creature. "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns." What does this description mean? It is a reference to the great power of Rome, which crushed all who opposed it. Expositors observes, "Thus the superior power of the Colossus of Rome is emphasized in the symbolism of this terrible fourth beast." Daniel chapter 7, verse 8 elaborates on the 10 horns. "I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, before whom three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots." Later in the chapter, we see that this little horn exalts himself to the position of an internationally powerful religious leader, even commanding a false religious system that persecutes the true followers of God. Verses 9 through 14 takes us right through to Christ's establishment of the kingdom of God on earth. "Then to him was given dominion and glory, and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed." So this Roman system, through its periodic revivals down through history, continues right to the time of the end when Jesus Christ returns to rule the earth. Revelation chapter 17 also helps us in understanding this end-time power. In this chapter, it is again depicted as a beast, but now we see that its final manifestation includes 10 kings, leaders of nations or groups of nations, who receive authority for 1 hour with the ruler of this end-time superpower, an individual the Bible refers to as the beast. This final revival of the Roman Empire leads into Christ's return as they make war with the Lamb. This concurs with Daniel chapter 2, verse 44, which obviously indicates that the second coming of Christ will occur in a time during which vestiges of the fourth beast or kingdom still exist. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. The greater part of these prophetic events, as detailed by the two dreams, has already been fulfilled. Their detailed completion affirms the divine inspiration of the Bible. The odds of any person foreseeing this on his own defy credibility. As Daniel said, "There is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days." Verse 28. The Bible's most detailed prophecy. Daniel chapter 11 records another phenomenal prophecy. The chronological setting is given in Daniel chapter 10, verse 1, as the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. That would be 536 to 535 BC. A man, no doubt an angel, came to tell Daniel what would occur in the latter days. The prophecy that follows is the most detailed in all the Bible. Given more than 500 years before the birth of Christ, this prophecy spans events from that time until the future return of Christ. The initial stages of the prophecy confirm the Bible because they have already been fulfilled, as can be verified by a study of the Persian and Greek empires. No man could foresee such fine historical detail. Some elements of what follows are intricate, requiring close attention. But a comparison of the prophetic words with the historical record makes them clear. Protracted political intrigue. The first 35 verses of Daniel chapter 11 give an account, written years in advance, of the intrigue between two political entities, the King of the South and the King of the North. In secular history, the King of the South is often referred to as Ptolemy. The Ptolemaic dynasty ruled from Alexandria in Egypt. The King of the North ruled from Antioch in Syria under the name Seleucus, or Antiochus. With this in mind, let's examine some of the details of the prophecy. You can find more information on the historical fulfillment of much of this prophecy in resources such as the Expositor's Bible Commentary, which we quote below, or other reliable reference works. Rather than our quoting the entire scriptural passage, we recommend that you read in your own Bible the cited verses, and remember that these details were foretold far in advance of their occurrence. Daniel chapter 11, verse 2. The three more kings are Cambyses, the elder son of Cyrus, Pseudo-Smerdis, an impostor who passed himself off as Cyrus's younger son, who had been secretly killed, and Darius the Persian. According to expositors, the Persian king who invaded Greece was Xerxes, who reigned 485 to 464 BC. Verses 3 through 4. Expositors expounds. Verse 3 introduces us to the rise of Alexander the Great. The language in verse 4 clearly suggests that this mighty conqueror was going to have a comparatively brief reign. In 7 or 8 years, he accomplished the most dazzling military conquest in human history. But he lived only 4 years more and died of a fever in 323. Alexander's kingdom was divided among four smaller and weaker empires. Alexander's infant son had been murdered in 310, and an illegitimate brother assassinated in 317. Thus, there were no descendants or blood relatives to succeed Alexander himself. So his kingdom was not divided among his posterity. Alexander's generals warred for control of his empire. The ensuing struggles for domination eliminated all but four, who became heads of the four divisions of his empire. This division into four was also foretold in the four-headed leopard of Daniel chapter 7, and the breaking of a male goat's large horn into four separate horns In Daniel chapter 8, the four successors were Cassander, reigning in Greece and the West, Lysimachus in Thrace and Asia Minor, Ptolemy in Egypt, and Seleucus in Syria. Of these four, two, Ptolemy and Seleucus, expanded their rule and territory. These were the kings of Egypt and Syria, respectively. The machinations that follow relate to these two. They are referred to as the king of the south, Ptolemy, and the king of the north, Seleucus, because of their location relative to Jerusalem. Verse 5. Expositor's Notes. The king of the south was to be Ptolemy the first. The biblical expression, one of his princes, refers to Seleucus. He had originally served under Ptolemy. In the intrigue after Alexander's death, Seleucus ultimately gained control over Syria and became king of the north. Seleucus eventually wielded more power than Ptolemy, controlling the greater part of what had been Alexander's empire. The dynasty of the Seleucid line was to continue until 64 BC. The Laodicean War. Verse 6. A state of tension and hostility existed between the king of the south and the king of the north. Ptolemy I died in 283 BC. In 252, the two powers attempted a treaty under which Berenice, the daughter of Ptolemy II, was to marry Antiochus II, the king of the north. Laodice, the first wife of Antiochus II, was repudiated. In 246 BC, Antiochus II was poisoned, widely assumed to be through the manipulations of Laodice. She claimed that Antiochus, on his deathbed, named her son heir. Berenice asked for help from Egypt to secure the throne for her own young son, but Laodice had them both assassinated. The prophecy, she, that is, Berenice, shall be given up, refers to the coup that Laodice engineered to effect the execution of Berenice, with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times, refers to the deaths of others around Berenice. Berenice, her father Ptolemy II, and her husband, Antiochus II, were all removed from power by death in 246 BC. Some nobles who had supported Berenice as queen were also brought down. Verses 7 through 9. Retaliation followed. A series of military actions, which came to be known as the Laodicean War, resulted. Ptolemy II's son Ptolemy III sought to avenge his sister's death. He attacked the king of the north, now Laodice's son Seleucus II, and captured Seleucia, the port and fortress of the Syrian capital of Antioch. Verse 8 describes the recapture by Ptolemy of, according to expositors, long-lost idols and sacred treasures that had been stolen from Egypt by Cambyses in 526 BC. Peace was concluded between Ptolemy III and Seleucus II in 241 BC. Ptolemy III died in 221, outliving Seleucus II by nearly 6 years. Verses 10 through 12. The sons of Seleucus II attacked the king of the south after their father died. One of these sons, Seleucus III, reigned for only 3 years. His military activity was relatively minor. He died by poisoning. Another son, Antiochus III, the Great, did overwhelm and pass through. He advanced into the Holy Land, which Egypt had controlled. Ptolemy IV, the king of the south, retaliated and defeated the larger army of Seleucus III at the Battle of Raphia in 217 BC. After his victory, Ptolemy turned to a life of debauchery during which he slaughtered tens of thousands of Jews in Egypt. Through all this, he weakened his kingdom. Verses 13 through 16. The phrase, at the end of some years, refers to an incident when, 15 years after his defeat, Antiochus III came against Ptolemy V, still a young boy. Ptolemy IV had died in 204. The Egyptian provinces were in turmoil because of the wretched life of Ptolemy IV. Many of the people, including Jews sympathetic to the king of the north, joined with Antiochus against the king of the south. The rebellion was ultimately crushed by the Egyptian general Scopas. When the forces of Antiochus withdrew over the winter of 201 and 200, Scopas regained some lost ground. The king of the north responded with another invasion. He won a decisive victory in northern Israel at the Battle of Panium and captured the city of Sidon, a fortified city where Scopas surrendered. Antiochus acquired complete control of the Holy Land, the Glorious Land. Verse 17. The Revised English Bible reads, "He, that is, the King of the North, will resolve to advance with the full might of his kingdom, and, when he has agreed terms with the King of the South, he will give his young daughter in marriage to him, with a view to the destruction of the kingdom. But the treaty will not last, nor will it be his purpose which is served." Having defeated Scopas, Antiochus desired to gain control of Egypt itself. He gave his daughter Cleopatra, not the later more famous queen of that name, to Ptolemy V in marriage. He believed she would betray the interests of her husband in favor of him, her father. But Cleopatra frustrated the plans of Antiochus by siding with her husband. Verses 18 and 19. Next, Antiochus attacked islands and coastal cities of southern Asia Minor and the Aegean area, at first areas that Egypt controlled, and then farther west in response to Greeks who appealed to him for help against increasing Roman control in the area. He also gave asylum to Rome's enemy, Hannibal of Carthage, who assisted him in landing in Greece. Rome responded by attacking Antiochus and inflicting defeat on his forces. The Romans deprived him of much of his territory and took several hostages to Rome, including Antiochus's son. Rome exacted heavy tribute of him. Antiochus returned in disgrace to his stronghold, Antioch. Unable to pay the heavy fees exacted by the Romans, he attempted to plunder a pagan temple in the eastern part of his kingdom. His action so enraged local inhabitants that they killed him, bringing him to an inglorious end. Verse 20, according to 2 Maccabees chapter 3, verses 7 through 40. Antiochus's other son, Seleucus IV, was also financially distressed by the tribute to Rome. 2 Maccabees is an apocryphal book that reports on these events. Seleucus sent one of his chief officials, Heliodorus, to collect taxes, even through plundering the temple at Jerusalem. Heliodorus went to the holy city but obtained nothing. Seleucus was later poisoned by Heliodorus and was thus killed, but not in anger or in battle. Antiochus, Epiphanes. Verses 21 through 35. These verses speak of the infamous Antiochus IV. Antiochus, Epiphanes, the brother of Seleucus IV, who had earlier been taken hostage to Rome. He was, according to expositors, a tyrannical oppressor who did his utmost to destroy the Jewish religion altogether. Antiochus passed laws that forbade the practice of the Jewish religion under penalty of death. He was a man of incredible cruelty. According to Charles Pfeiffer in his book, Between the Testaments, an aged scribe, Eleazar, was flogged to death because he refused to eat swine's flesh. A mother and her seven children were successively butchered, in the presence of the governor, for refusing to pay homage to an image. Two mothers who had circumcised their newborn sons were driven through the city and cast headlong from the wall. Verse 31. This refers to the momentous events of December 16, 168 BC, when a crazed Antiochus entered Jerusalem and killed 80,000 men, women, and children. See 2 Maccabees, chapter 5, verses 11 through 14. He then desecrated the temple by offering a sacrifice of swine to the chief Greek god, Zeus. This outrage was a forerunner of a comparable event that Jesus Christ said would occur in the last days. See Matthew chapter 24, verse 15. Verses 32 through 35. These verses appear to describe, on one level, the indomitable will and courage of the Maccabees, a family of priests who resisted Antiochus and his successors. The Maccabees' revolt against the Syrian king was triggered when, according to expositors, Mattathias, the leading priest in the city of Modane, after killing the officer of Antiochus, who had come to enforce the new decree concerning idolatrous worship, led a guerrilla band that fled to the hills. Mattathias was aided in his cause by five sons, most notably Judah or Judas, nicknamed Maccabah, Aramaic for hammer, whence derives the name Maccabees. Many of these patriots died in this cause, but their heroics ultimately drove the Syrian forces from the country. On another level, these verses evidently refer to the New Testament church, with their references to mighty works, persecution, and apostasy continuing until the time of the end. Indeed, with the explicit reference to the end time, Daniel's prophecy definitely takes on a different tone at this point. To quote expositors, "With the conclusion of the preceding pericope, that is, extract, at verse 35, the predictive material that incontestably applies to the Hellenistic empires and the contest between the Seleucids and the Jewish patriots ends. This present section, verses 36 through 39, contains some features that hardly apply to Antiochus IV, though most of the details could apply to him as well as to his latter-day antitype, the beast. Liberal and conservative scholars agree that all of chapter 11 up to this point contains strikingly accurate predictions of the whole sweep of events from the reign of Cyrus to the unsuccessful effort of Antiochus Epiphanes to stamp out the Jewish faith. From this point forward, a little more than a century would pass before the Roman general Pompey would conquer Jerusalem. Much of the Middle East passed to the control of the Roman Empire, and much of its power in turn passed to its eastern leg, the Byzantine Empire, in the following centuries. But then, as we'll see in the next chapter, a remarkable new power and religion arose on the scene to dominate the Middle East for centuries: the Islamic Empire.
Thanks for listening to The Four Empires of Daniel's Prophecies in the booklet, The Middle East in Bible Prophecy. For the rest of the booklet, please visit ucg.org.